Hey guys, welcome back to Star Craving Madness. This is Britt, and Lex is gonna be out of this episode currently, but they'll be returning, so it'll be good. So if you're listening to this, you're probably into true crime, horror, unexplained phenomenons, things like that. And if you like things like that, you're most definitely in the right place. So, if you haven't seen this movie, you've probably heard of it at least. It's called The Haunting in Connecticut, and it came out, I believe, around like 2010, 2011, something like that. You guys should most definitely go check it out. It's one of those movies that will for sure make you... You know how you see certain horror movies and it makes you kind of sit at the edge of your bed waiting for 5 minutes contemplating whether you want to get up to pee or not because, you know, it's a little bit creepy under there. So it's one of those movies for sure. I haven't seen many movies that make me do that. That and then Mirrors. Mirrors is a really good horror movie. But anyway, I am rambling. So, today we're talking about the real haunting in Connecticut case that the horror movie is loosely based on. So, it begins in 1986. Carmen and Al Snedeker moved to this small town in Connecticut, Southington, I believe it's called. Yeah, Southington. So, if you're from Connecticut, go check out Southington. I believe the house is still there. I don't know if people own it right now. I know people owned it at the time of the filming of the movie in, like, 2011. And they had a bunch of people come and check it out. But I'm pretty sure right now, as long as you're respectful, you can go check it out. You just have to kind of... People, I think, own the property, so I believe you gotta kind of look at it from a distance. But it'd still be a cool thing to see. So anyway, they moved to Southington, Connecticut, and the family made this move to be closer to the hospital because their kid was getting treatment and taken care of for Hodgkin's lymphoma. And if you don't know what this is, it's basically a type of cancer. So the family moved there to kind of, they were having to go to the hospital, I think, according to Lorraine Warren, like, what the mom told her was they had to go to the hospital up to more than 2 times a week on a daily basis, so they moved to this house because it was really, really close to the hospital that they were having to go to for their son. So, it made sense, So the family, due to their financial situation, moved into the best and the cheapest option. And this house was big enough for their family, which consisted of Carmen, Al, and their 3 children, and one of their cousins that lived with them. So according to Al, after they moved, he made an eerie discovery in the basement of the house. And so a lot of people with this case... there's a lot of speculation behind it, because a lot of people with many cases like this are like, why would you move into a house like that if you knew about it beforehand? Well, so, in the basement, Al discovered this embalming room with the tables and the tools still there, and not only was there an embalming room, there was also a coffin room that they hadn't discovered was a coffin room because the house was, beforehand, a funeral home. So, I mean, personally, I'd be calling the real estate agent or landlord, but they didn't do that. So, anyway, they move into this house, and from the get-go, the kids start, I think, I believe the mom said that the kids started picking up on something bad. They said that the house was evil, like, the first day that they moved into it. Which, I'm sorry, but I'm paranoid as hell when it comes to the paranormal. If my kid told me that they were hearing voices and seeing shit running around my house, nah, we're not moving there. Sorry. Like, we can go figure it out somewhere else. But, this family wasn't like that. She kind of just, the mom kind of took it as, you know, imagination. So they moved in and they figured out that, you know, it was a past funeral home. It still got the embalming room, all this other stuff. And so they also found a cemetery was in the backyard. And, you know, it creeped them out, yes, but it wasn't too much. So, a few days, and, you know, the kids are experiencing things, yes, but the parents were not, you know, experiencing anything at this point. So, it was kind of nonchalant. So, the family basically had a pretty few easy days, and they turned two of the sons' rooms, into bedrooms in the basement because it was the most spacious area. So they move their son, Philip, and I believe, I cannot remember their other, I believe it was Brian or something like that. I'll have to check into that one. But their other son, down there. And so not long after, Carmen is the mom, claims that she began finally experiencing some strange things. Items began disappearing at random, and her children began to claim strange people around the house, along with hearing voices. So, you know, not just hearing voices, but seeing strange people just up in your household. 'Cause that's normal. So, anyway, here is a pretty wild clip of Carmen explaining one of her many experiences in the house. Let me know what you guys think.
It would take me 2 years to explain it all to you, but there were so many things that happened. We had banging. We had mattresses breathe. We had, whenever I put mop water to the floor, it would turn this thick, red, putrid, smelly stuff. We finally had to rip that linoleum up. I contacted the manufacturer, and they said it could not happen, but it was happening.
Okay, so all of these things were happening, and of course, you're exploring this new home that you're renting mm-hmm. in 1986 because your son was getting care for cancer, and you wanted to be closer to that medical right. facility. And you've learned that the home was?
A funeral home. It okay. had been a funeral home. It was built to be a funeral home. The director lived above it. He raised his son there, and he sold it when he got in his 90s. And we were the first people that moved in after it had been a funeral home.
Okay.
So, she said when she was mopping the basement floor that the water turned blood red, which, fuck nah. And her oldest at the time, Philip, was in the middle of radiation treatment. He began exhibiting bizarre behavior for him, personally. So, he began to withdraw and was pretty angry as a person at this time. He began to hide away in the basement, and he wrote pretty odd poetry. Like, that's basically all he did was sit in the basement and write weird poetry. And his mom said that this poetry that he was writing pertained to, like, the things that were happening around the house, and oddly enough, with necrophiliac themes. And during one intense episode, he attacked his cousin that lived with them with the intent to rape her. So after this instance, the family had Philip arrested and admitted to the psych ward to be evaluated, where he was pronounced schizophrenic. So he was moved from the house, and while he was gone, it, you know, his overall improved a lot. Like, he was pretty much good by the time he left the house. And when he returned, shit started hitting the fan for him again. And not only for him, but also for his family. So, he returns home, and the family basically, it was the normal crazy shit that they were already experiencing, like the throwing plates and hearing voices and feeling shit. But it most definitely escalated after Philip came back. So when Carmen and her niece Tammy were raped brutally, repetitively, and her husband was sodomized by whatever entities were residing in this house, they kind of were like, whoa, what the fuck? And I actually have a clip of Carmen and Tammy describing these experiences for you guys.
Really engulfed me. And every night since, I've been under some sort of attack. The next night, I was sodomized. The following night, I was raped. My husband's been sodomized. My husband's been taken into a deep trance and showed horrible things. I was sodomized doing dishes.
But it was her niece, Tammy, that first aroused the interest, sexual or otherwise, in their resident entity.
Something was just grabbing at my bra and pulling it down. And I would pull it back, and it was like pulling a strap down. And it was pulling the whole front of it down. I kept pulling it back. And, I got scared. So I rolled over with my stomach. And it stopped then, and then it like felt like something had picked up my covers down below the bed and just like gradually come up and just lift my neck up and touch my back and just like split up my back and back down.
These are the Warrens, a couple that have followed the trail of the paranormal wherever.
So after this experience, by the way, which is fucking crazy to just hear yourself, because, like, I don't know, somebody says they get brutally assaulted like that by a ghost, and I'm sorry, but it is kind of hard to believe, but holy cow, that would be insane. So anyway, after this, Carmen began seeing apparitions herself, finally, and she described one that horrified her as one with long black hair and black eyes, the other, white hair, and eyes wearing a pinstripe tux. And it was basically at this point that the fear consumed the family. They contacted investigators of the paranormal, Ed and Lorraine Warren, along with others, and they moved in, actually, with the Snedekers for a few weeks. And listen to what Lorraine Warren's opinions on this were, and because just her experience on this whole thing, she backs the family up 100% on this, and it's pretty, a big deal when Ed and Lorraine Warren have to come to your house, because they are the biggest paranormal investigators known to name, period. And so anyway, they stayed there with the family and without the family for a few weeks just to see what would go on. And this is an interview that she had done about the case.
By Carmen Snedeker and her niece, who was living with the family at that time. And we didn't know too much about it other than the fact that, you know, when she called, she was hysterical on the telephone. When we got there, Ed went right downstairs into mm-hmm. the basement area. And I talked to her and her niece for a while. I don't think the husband had moved from New York State to Connecticut at that time. Mm-hmm. He had a transfer with his job. You see, the son was getting chemo at UConn Medical, and they were actually going back and forth, I think, more than once a week for that, for him. And that was taking its toll. So that's how they happened to come about renting this home that they rented.
Mm-hmm.
When Ed and I got into the house itself, we separated and Ed went downstairs. After a little while, I went downstairs, and as soon as I walked into the first room, it was just an overwhelming bad feeling. I had a feeling of fear and like that, mm-hmm. that I probably was picking up from the boy who had experienced what he had in that room, which was his bedroom. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that that room was a coffin room where the coffins were kept, where they would pick out the families would pick out the coffin. Mm-hmm. And then I started to walk down the hallway. I'm not seeing Ed, mm-hmm. and I knew he hadn't passed me, so I couldn't quite understand where he went. Now, as I walked down the hall, there was little anterooms, kind of, that went off where there were things, different things stored. I got down to the end of the hallway, and I looked to my left, and I could see the area where they brought the bodies in, mm-hmm. and it was the double doors on that side of the driveway. Then there was two prep rooms, and one of them was a bloodletting area, and the other was where they would bring the bodies up for viewing. And I thought, oh my God, why would these trappings still be here for a family coming here with a young family? And it was kind of uncomfortable, but I thought, well, they're not buying the house, you know, they're just really renting here. And so I didn't say anything about that. I didn't address that part of the issue. But while I was in this area where they prepped the bodies, I had horrible bad feelings. And why should I have such horrible bad feelings when it was people who had passed, and it was people who were being prepared for burial? And but a far more had exactly, I believe, had gone on in that area that the family was not aware of. For one thing, Carmen was not aware that she actually rented a funeral home. She was not aware of that when she did that. So then we went upstairs, and she began talking, and Denise began talking about the frightening things that were happening in the home. The one frightening thing that was happening in the home is that where the niece slept, which was on that main floor of the house in a small bedroom, the covers on her bed would levitate off her. They would levitate right off her, and then you would see something under the covers besides her. And that really, you know, that would terrify this niece that was sleeping, that was living there with them. So this went on for a period of time. We asked the Catholic priest if he was the parish priest, if he would come and bless the house. And he did. He did come to bless the house, but it needed far more than a blessing of the house. Mm-hmm. Because it just seemed to antagonize what was there. You could stay like the whole night, as we would do, in the home itself. When we were there, we would stay in the master bedroom. Not that we were sleeping, mm-hmm. but we were there. And you would hear that chain voice coming up mm-hmm. by itself. So Ed went down there to see if there was anybody doing that, excuse me, moving that chain hoist like that. Mm-hmm. There was no one. There was no one down there at all. He could actually see that actually happening at that time. Then there was these two people of science, and they asked Ed if it would be possible for them to go into the house and spend the night with us there in the home and see exactly what they, as people of science, would be able to pick up. They fled in the middle of the night.
So, as you guys could tell, that got pretty crazy. They began investigating the history of the house a bit deeper, and they revealed that supposedly one of the undertakers of the funeral home was found completely guilty of necrophilia. Now, I'm forgetting how to English in this podcast. So the funeral home undertaker was found guilty of necrophilia, supposedly. I couldn't find many sources on, like, where they got this information or anything like that. So I don't know, but the Warrens after this was basically like, we need to do a whole ass scale exorcism of this property. And so they did that, and they got a priest in and got everything cleaned up. And after that, they deemed the house cleared. So the family stayed in the house for 2 years after it was exorcised and then moved to Tennessee. And Carmen is actually now a spiritual advisor, and her kids, who experienced the hell in this house, are grown up with kids of their own. Sadly, Philip didn't completely beat cancer. It went away for a while, and then he went into remission, and it returned, and he passed away on August 9th, 2012. He actually ended up having 4 kids, though. I believe she said that he changed his identity and stuff after the family kind of grew up and things, just to keep his identity not connected to the traumatic experience. So I think overall he sounded like he lived a pretty chill life after this, thank God. So, but if you want more of the podcast, you can follow our Instagram. Our handle is @StarkRavingMadnessPodcast, where you can find our website. We have it in the bio link. And on our website, you can find literally all other forms of social media. You could find us on Spotify, you can find us on iTunes. And I also really, really wanted to try and give a few of our fans shout outs, because some of you guys are awesome. And actually, you know, I get to sit back and talk with you guys, have personal one-on-one conversations. We just got an Instagram, so I've been able to talk with a few people on there, get opinions, and I wanted to thank you guys from mine and Lex's, both of us, so much for that, because we do, you know, I now know I need a mic, most definitely need to go make that upgrade. And thank you guys for kind of giving us input on the episodes and the way that we can improve, whether you like them, what we need to do more of. So anyway, I wanted to give a shout out to one of my friends from the Black Heart Club community. Their Instagram is its_Jackson, JAXON 2020. And their Discord is Jackson#6269. Did I just say pound? I said pound. That's a fucking hashtag this day. Oh, wow. I just pulled a 90s. you can push the pound button. Anyway, their Discord is #6269, number sign, whatever the fuck you want to call it. Also, go check out his Black Hearts Club fan page for Dominic Harrison, because if you like this podcast, you better like Youngblood, because I love Youngblood. And you also got to be a Taylor Swift fan, because Lex is crazy obsessed with T-Swizzle. So you can go follow their fan page for Youngblood. They actually just started posting, but so far so good. Go check it out. Show them some love. It is at Youngblood, YUNGBLUD .IS.EPIC on Instagram. And then I wanted to give another shout out to one of our fans, Hector. You can go check out his YouTube. He's got actually some pretty cool stuff. I don't know if you guys watch a lot of gameplay, but he does some pretty nice gameplay for Modern Warfare and Warzone. So you can go check him out. His YouTube is Hooligan4L, but it's like a lowercase L. I guess Hooligan41 is what you would call him. Or you can check out his Instagram at hooligan.4! And then I also wanted to give a shout out to one of our fans that kind of helped give a little bit of input. They have really, really cool art, and if you're into anime and manga, they have a lot of that on there. It's super cute, actually. I like it. So you can go follow them. They have a super cute Instagram, at spooky_Casey, C-A-S-E-Y. And I wanted to thank all you guys for showing support and love and listening to us, giving us input and feedback. It is always appreciated. You guys are always appreciated. I'm sorry about not being able to drop the Killer Clown one. Things have been kind of tough lately, so we will be back. We're going to be taking probably a break for a week. This drop will be the last drop until our Killer Clown episode, which we will have for you guys on the 26th. And, you know, it's really, this podcast is important, but also mental health is important. Taking care of yourself and your happiness is important. So we're going to take a break for about a week. If you guys want, we have plenty of episodes. You guys can go back and check them out. We did one on Albert Fish. We did one on the fucking almost said the Boston Strangler. No. I can't fucking think right now. But my apologies. I hope you guys have a good night. I hope you know how much me and Lex appreciate you. I hope you guys are taking care of yourselves and staying safe out there. And most importantly, have a good night.